Welcome. Happy you're here.
We're happy I'm here too.
So I think we have some people who are here with us for the first time. Is that true?
Yeah.
I've heard that rumor. So I thought it'd be fun, if, even though all of you who are with us for the first time are probably meditators, maybe so, I thought it'd be fun to ask some old-timers some of the things about how we do things that might not be immediately obvious to people. I thought it'd be fun to start with sitting. Whose hands are those? Is Winnie?
Yes. The thing that when I first came to this practice, the biggest difference is meditating with my eyes open.
It's a very strange thing to do, isn't it?
Yes. But for very good reason.
Yes. Can you give us one of those?
Well, if the extent to which attention and sight are related, there's a conditioned correlation between sight and attention. So when you walk into a room and a television is playing, automatically the attention moves where the eyes move.
Mm-hmm.
And so the ability to disconnect those,
mm-hmm.
and to be in the mind of meditation with your eyes open.
The extra benefit is then you can meditate anywhere. Right? If you have to close your eyes to meditate, it's somewhat limited.
Right.
For instance, you wouldn't want to meditate while you drive.
Right. Well, and such an association with sleep.
With sleep, yeah. Close your eyes, go to sleep.
If I'm being present and I'm awake, then I'm doing that with my eyes open.
Mm-hmm. So the first point that you made is a really big one, that in practice we learn to not have attention associated with the eyes, which means if we can manage to drop it down and get it farther away from conditioned mind. Mm-hmm. All right, so when attention, vision, conditioned mind, when they're just looping around there together, it's very difficult to stay here. Right? But when we separate those, and attention can be here, Nahara, the eyes can be doing whatever they're doing. Attention and the eyes are not united, and so we can walk around. The eyes don't have to dominate our experience. We can learn to be in the world in a different way. Yeah, lots of arguments for that. And the biggest argument against it that people come up with is it's really hard. And so I want to point out that it's really hard, it's not something you're attracted to, this may not be for you. Yeah. All right, thank you. Who else? What else? Jen?
I appreciate how the posture of meditation is such an integral part, and that there's a way to sit completely relaxed and yet very alert, focused, and here. And that what I found, you know, like anything that's brand new, I wasn't, you know, my body wasn't necessarily comfortable in the position immediately. But over time, what I found is sitting in this way is by far the most comfortable way, like way more comfortable than sitting on a couch or a chair.
Oh, yeah. Than the American C curve. Right? Why do we have so many back problems in this country? I just don't understand it. Yeah. So in this posture, what happens to us when we're sitting, and just in the rest of life too, is that the upper body is balanced over the hips. And so it can actually begin to be weightless instead of pain-filled, right? Which is a happier way to be. Okay, so we learn to drop the shoulders,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah. And sitting on the forward on the cushion, that was such a big thing for me at first. Because, I mean, just the natural thing is just to sit back and get comfy.
Right? Pretend you're on a couch.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's that seeker. And it's not at all supportive.
Right.
And so just that critical just coming forward on my cushion is such a huge difference in terms of, as you say, that weightless, just being able to be supported.
The negative with that is, as you well know, airplane seats, where you're required to sit in that miserable position for hours on end. And all one wants to do is cross one's legs and sit on something that enables one to get out of that. But it's not an option. Yeah. All right. Thank you. Rebecca, is that to you?
Yeah. I didn't know a lot about meditation when I first came, but the one thing I thought I knew was that it was about making my mind quiet.
Making my mind quiet. Oh, what a little start. Yeah.
And so to learn to be introduced to the process of watching the mind was just revolutionary.
Mm-hmm.
And using the breath, using counting the breath as the anchor in doing that.
Mm-hmm. So you're with the breath,
mm-hmm.
Staying with the breath through attending to it via counting,
mm-hmm.
right? 34,
exactly.
Five, yeah, or the 2, 2, yeah. And so staying with the breath, mm-hmm. counting, and simply attending rather than being in control of something. So that goes nicely with the relaxed shoulders and the relaxed belly, right? So you can breathe freely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the image that was so helpful was the trains on a train, the train cars on a track. And so the thoughts would be like the train car. And you don't have to jump on it, turns out. and every now and then I would see the space in between. Like there would go a thought, there would go a train car, and then there would be this little light that would shine into space, this emptiness, and then another one would come right behind it, and then another one. But eventually those spaces would get
bigger.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, not that they're actually bigger, right, if we stay with the train, but because you're attending to the space rather than the car,
yeah.
it appears to be bigger.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so cool.
All right, very good. Scott?
Yes to all of that, and the other thing that kind of goes along that for me is that we face a white wall.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that because, you know, if you're going out in the world and you're like feeling anxious or angry or all that kind of stuff, it just gets, it seems like that person said that to me or that situation happened or...
That's why.
But then when you sit in front of a white wall and have the same experiences and nothing's going on,
uh-huh.
it really gives you a clue about where that's kind of all coming from.
Uh-huh. Yes. Unless I am paranoid enough to believe that white wall. I start to get it. Yeah. You saw that.
Something that I wish someone had told me, even if maybe someone told me, I don't remember, is that it really stops being boring after a bit. Because at the beginning is the most boring thing on earth, you know. Well, for me, I don't know. For me, it was immensely boring. I kept peeking at my watch, and then
That's the good beginner step, right?
Or as the person there, as the person there died.
Yeah, you have to just over your shoulder a little to make sure you're still sitting upright.
And then it starts being interesting then. So.
Yes. Yeah. When we begin to pay attention, right? When we begin to pay attention, actually everything is interesting. Right? When we begin to pay attention to something other than what's in here, which is definitely not interesting. except to what's in here, right? This is endlessly interesting and entertaining to itself.
No, but if it were entertaining, one wouldn't be picking up the watch, though. So it's not even entertaining.
Good point. Yeah. Well, of course, that's part of it, right? That's part of its deal, is trying to come up with those kinds of things. Like, you got into meditation and you forgot to turn your watch over so that you could see it, right? And then that'll take up 5 or 10 minutes of berating you for having forgotten to make your watch visible. So go ahead.
In addition to what everybody has said, one thing that struck me when I first came to this practice is to not turn the practice of meditation into a contest. That was like news to me. You know, everything was a contest. Everything was, you know, just pushing through, and to make a commitment to meditate, whether and start out with what is doable. You know, the importance of making a commitment and sticking to the commitment rather than,
I'm going to meditate for 4 hours today.
Yeah.
And actually for the rest of my life.
Right.
And then I make it for 10 minutes and the rest is beatings.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
So why not just make it for 10 minutes?
Exactly.
Well, 10 minutes feels really hard. Well, how about 5?
5 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the other thing about when sitting in that, you know, there may be pain. And to just, let's see, the kind thing is like to not just go into immediately responding to that and you know, adjusting, but just stay with it a little bit, but it's fine to move if needed after just staying with it.
So carefully. So presently. Mm-hmm. The two people on either side of you have no idea that you moved.
Yeah.
Now that can take up the whole sitting period, right?
Yes.
Trying to pull that one off.
Yes. Very mindfully and carefully and respectful of everyone around.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Something that you said about that was important. It just flitted through and flitted out again. You know how that goes?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. It'll flip back.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. It was good. Jim.
One of the things that's been really helpful for me is remembering that what we do is monitor or pay attention to body, feelings, mind, and mind objects.
Mm-hmm.
And for a very long time, I thought that, okay, I'm slumping and I'm going to sit up straighter and I'm, got the, you know, in the position that I'm supposed to be in. Now I can get back to meditation.
Mm-hmm.
But that is meditation.
Mm-hmm.
Maintain the posture.
Uh-huh. Yes, not in a rigid kind of way. And what you're saying is auditing it, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Checking in, making sure the posture is the posture.
Yeah. For a long time, I thought there was something more important to do.
Uh-huh.
You did that so that you could then do whatever the important thing was.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And to realize, oop, that is the important thing. Which reminds me, thank you very much, of what I saw when Sequoia was talking. Because often there is pain in sitting practice simply because the body's not used to it. Right? I mean, we could do anything. We could all go out there and sprint up to the gate. And, you know, unless you've been doing that regularly, we would probably feel something. And if we wanted to do that, then it would behoove us to do it with regularity until it became easy, right? And the same with the sitting posture. When we train ourselves to sit, then the sitting posture discomfortable. But we have, the body has to learn to do that. And in my experience, we have to take care of ourselves such that we are able to do that. Right? If sitting is important to us. Because otherwise, it becomes something that I should do to be the right person. I have to do it. I hate it. It's miserable. It's awful. But if we want to do it, then we will arrange for ourselves to be comfortable doing it. Yeah. Thank you. Matt?
A thought and a question. The thought is, the process of coming back to the breath, sometimes I get caught up in like a little mini battering cycle, right, of like, now I'm at the breath, and I'm going to be perfect.
And what?
And I'm going to be perfect. There's like the promise to be perfect. Like, right, I'm not going to leave the breath. I know. I'm not there right now because I see it. But just that there's nothing wrong with you when you lose yourself in your thoughts. It's the coming back that's the practice.
Yes. Yes. And the thing that to me you're pointing out that is so important with that is it's not that contest. It's not I'm a good meditator if I never lose track of the breath. But how am I when I do?
Yeah.
Which inevitably I will.
Yeah. And so then it becomes a practice of loving kindness.
Yes.
Constant devotion. All of the things that we're practicing.
Yes.
Are there in that moment.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The question I have is is there long-term damage possible from legs falling asleep?
Not that I've ever known of.
Okay.
However, I wish I had known that sooner, because there really are a number of things that we can do to address that. They shouldn't fall asleep. There's something wrong if they do.
The boys are like, your leg's going to be amputated.
Yeah, right. Blood clots. They're going to go to the heart and then directly to the brain, and that's it. You'll be the first one ever, yeah, to die of meditation. Yeah. So usually when legs fall asleep, I'm sure people have talked to you about this, but it's because you're sitting too low on the cushion, and you're cutting off the circulation to the back of your thighs, basically. And the other way, yeah, it's the middle way, Matt. Because if you sit too high on the cushion, your legs will also fall asleep. So one of the things that I encourage people to do in that way of moving sort of slow, and that Sequoia was talking about. So you sit for about how long? Into the sitting period. Mm-hmm. We only ever sit for half an hour, right? Even at home, we don't sit for longer than that.
It's about 20 minutes in.
About 20 minutes in. Okay, so you'll notice when it starts, okay? And sit with it for long enough that you're really attending to what's going on. You know, you're feeling it. And see if you can get a sense of, I'm slightly off-center on the cushion. So my right foot is in front right now. So, and I'm sitting as I'm sitting. Okay. If I were to do this, I'm no longer balanced.
Uh-huh.
Right? So if I did that, then I would have to adjust the cushion so that I'm once again in the middle of the cushion. So there's not more weight on one side than on the other. And so when you feel it beginning to to go, and you stay with it for just a moment or so to get a sense of what's going on with you, then you can do the Okay? And you may have to adjust again to get to the middle. And make sure when you're sitting on the cushion that you can feel that your sitting bones are in the same place from the center of the cushion. Your spine, the tip of your spine is right in the middle, and the weight is off of the back of your thighs equally. Yeah, yeah. So go 20 minutes, then at 21 or 22, switch. And of course, it is really good. Oh my goodness, see, this is the kind of thing I have to be really careful about. Just kidding. You always want to switch with each sit. Do you do that? Different foot in front with each sit? Pardon me?
Well, one of my legs doesn't stretch as far as the other. So when I have a shorter sit, when I'm not here, I do switch. Here, 30 minutes, I think I'd be pretty wrecked if I tried to do it from to one side because it just doesn't stretch that far.
Okay. So that's what you're going to work on when you get home, right?
Yeah. I might just contact that and do a few sessions with her to see if I can.
This is our yoga teacher who is a master of breathing and posture and all of those things, and works remotely for anybody who has those questions. Yeah, so to work on stretching out so that you can do that to, you know, longer. But it's really helpful to have a different foot, either in front or if you do half lotus up on your thigh, because otherwise one does become tilted.
Mm-hmm. I love the principle of not scratching an itch during meditation. It's training to be on the cushion as we want to be off the cushion. So we're in meditation and your right ear starts to itch. And instead of going, we sit with it.
Mm-hmm. And become intimately acquainted with an itch.
And become fascinated by it. Mm-hmm. And realize that we don't need to do anything. And then off the cushion, something comes up, and there's that, well, I've got it, there's that urgency.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of going to scratch that itch, whatever it might be, we get to watch it, be with it, not identify with it, with what it's saying we need to do.
Yes. Yes, because that, either it's a leg falling asleep or itching or whatever, this is on a campaign of you're going to die.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to be so hideous, you're not going to be able to stand it. Well, you are going to die. You know, you're going to lose your legs.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's, you know. And so proving to ourselves that that's not the case, as you say, there's great application in the rest of life when the starts in.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Pasha.
Well, there's also...
Speak to the back of the
room. There's also a DVD with you presenting how to sleep. And,
this is true. A much younger, dare I say, cuter.
And I watched it multiple times. And every time I find something there that was there all the time, but I just
didn't hear it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, somehow when I started, I thought that I need to breathe, like I need to do the breathing.
You needed to control that breath.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
even to the degree that in my group, the facilitator had to
take you aside. You're making us nervous for this panting.
Yeah, but what I realized later, when I don't do the breathing, it's like nothing happening. But then I realized that over time, that in that nothing happening, I'm receiving so much. Mm-hmm. I'm not there to be and do something, but if I just be in a place of receiving, there's so much comes. Mm-hmm. And the things that are like gifts, and I'm still receiving them, the quieter I think I go without bringing anything kind of from me, the more, the bigger is this place of receiving.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. To just allow it, to open into it, rather than trying to control on any level.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And for me, it's in the mind of what kind of interesting. What is this coming? What is this? What is this?
We can stop right there, right? What is this? Yeah. And so it starts with the sitting still, mm-hmm. and then what we've been talking about, of course, on the morning show, with all that the body is doing.
Yes.
Just this miraculous
magical
thing that's making all of this possible for us. Mm-hmm. And then as you sit there in the quiet, there's insight, intuition, a sense of connection, a presence, all of those kinds of things, and marveling at that. We're not required to do anything in order for everything to be. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the differences between from this kind of meditation to some of the others is it's practicing being simply practicing being aware, not trying to get into any state, whatever it is.
Because to accomplish anything.
Yeah, to accomplish anything or to feel actually any particular way. Because what I love about it is that in our practice, you know, we do a lot of looking at conditioned mind and seeing what's going on and noticing and being aware of our process and all that. Well, we couldn't do that unless we were practicing being aware. Mm-hmm. And meditation is the basic way we can practice. We practice being aware.
Yeah. So directing the attention, mm-hmm. right? Because what we're moving toward is having attention rest on awareness, right? So when we're sitting, we're constantly bringing attention back here, bringing it back here, being with the breath, the counting, so that we stay here. So it wanders off, attention wanders off somewhere and does God knows what, and we realize it, and we're back here, and we're attempting to keep attention here. And that's the simplest way to learn to do that everywhere in life. So it's back to the what Anna was talking about with the itch, mm-hmm. right? So when we're out in the world, mm-hmm. instead of just being caught in conditioned mind and all over the place, we're training ourselves to be present, to be in the moment where we are.
Yes, and as you say, direct our attention, so that's how we can move the focus of attention, because we know where it is, so we know, and mm-hmm. we know where we can move it. And as you're saying that, it was like, and the more we pay attention or be able to direct our attention, that somehow allows our awareness to expand.
Yes.
Because they're connected with the, we have to be aware of where our attention is in order to bring our attention back. And so it's becoming, the awareness is becoming fine-tuned and expanding, as well as the attention being focused. Mm-hmm. Then the attention can also be on the awareness, you know.
Yes, attention on awareness and awareness on attention. Yes, which is a wonderful segue. Thank you very much. Yeah. I think we should do one of our very favorite exercises at this point on that very subject. Don't you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yes? See, many people know what we're going to do. That's how often we do this. But, as Suzuki Roshi pointed out to us, if we don't enjoy repetition, our practice will become very hard. So we do enjoy repetition. So if you close your eyes, and turn your attention to the top of your head. And now move your attention to your navel. And now move your attention to the small of your back. And now move your attention to the palm of your left hand. And now turn your attention to the big toe on your right foot. Your eyes. What did you notice? Michael?
Well, an assessment about how well or not well I'm doing it, and kind of checking it off of the top of the head check. And then I started wondering, well, am I supposed to leave it there until you do the next one?
Because it kind of used to draw the line from the and then, and will there be a review? We're supposed to be.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, what if I have to talk about it? What should I say?
I was going way too slow, right? Way a lot of time in there for analysis.
Yeah, which is interesting to me because when life requires me to pay attention continuously, it's really, it's easy for my attention to be drawn to that.
To what you're attempting to attend to or to the conversation?
Yeah, yeah, or if I'm doing something else or if I'm working with somebody else directly. And I notice that it's easy for my attention to be entrained, shall we say, into the moment of what I'm doing. And it seems with awareness practice, we're becoming aware of that, and also sort of another level of directing it myself, as we've just been talking about in meditation.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting to be aware of that. And it seems to me when I come on retreat that there are often a lot of those experiences here that require me to be here. They're more immediate, or I don't know what the word is. But pull my attention into the moment. There's not other distractions going on.
Uh-huh.
I'm encouraged to follow the conversation while I'm in a group.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. There are guidelines that I need to follow.
Mm-hmm. And do you suppose when you are doing a task, say at work, are you unaware of that other conversation that might be going on, or do you think it's actually missing?
I think it's mostly missing. And I started a new job a couple months ago, and I feel like for the first time I have a real mentor at work, and we work side by side. And so I really enjoyed that time of year. I mean, to conditioning is way too intense and way too much work, but there's not when we're working together, there's nothing else because there's no time. Because he's asking me about the spreadsheet or what do we do next, or I can't.
You have to have an answer.
I've got
to
have an answer.
Right.
Well, it's what you always say, that attention can only be on one hand.
Yes.
So it's here, then, as much as I can't, there's no room.
Yeah. The other thing about that is that, and this applies to meditation, you were aware of all of it that was going on, right? I mean, you were able to report the tension is here, and then what, this and that and this and that, and then I get the next assignment, right? So it's not like you were attending to the direction and then wandered off somewhere and had no idea, or, you know, missed three locations and then tuned back into what are we doing. So sometimes people will hear voices in their head tell them that's a really lousy meditation, because you didn't count from 1 to 10 till the bell rang. And yet you knew everything you were doing. So, you know, so you thought about the kids for a while, and then thought about that problem at work for a while, and then thought about this for a while, and thought about that for a while. So attention was there, attending. It just wasn't attending to the counting. Yeah. All right. Yeah, that's right.
So I always love this experience in this exercise, and I never expected, but it somehow always happens, where if... So I was able to move the attention to those different places. The place where it felt the quality of attention was different was in the palm of the hand. Because the palm of the hand is a large space. And I was aware that I think of attention as a point. Not as... There's an awareness of attention being something pointed, and so when it's a specific place to which the attention can point, then there's
big toe. That's a fairly small area.
There's a way that it highlights the belief around how I'm aware of my big toe, the shape of my big toe, or the shape of the top of the head is a point. It's not an area, right?
Yeah, a point. A pointed head.
And so it was just fun to see how resting in the palm of the hand, there's no point in the palm of the hand.
Well, I wondered that when I said small at the back. Did anybody kind of have to race around there a lot to try to find exactly what is the small of the back? It took a little extra time to kind of roam around there.
it's just interesting to see how the mind works. What are the beliefs?
Yes.
Even in an exercise around attention.
Yes.
That the quality of what attention is something we get to explore.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. How many people did feel that? Kind of, it's like a laser goes there, or it's a... Yeah? No? Yes? Yeah? And could you feel it when it reached the right spot?
Yeah, but and then it kind of spread. Like, it's like, for me, it was like a point, and then it kind of, like, could kind of go like that.
Oozes.
Well, and it had a pulse.
Uh-huh.
And it was active.
Active, yeah. Yeah.
Mine, everywhere I went, it felt tingly. Like, I was so clear, I was feeling sensation in every space. So when I went to the small of my back, I went right to that lower back point that's been bugging me.
It was really bad. There it is.
And I guess it is a point in some sense, but it felt more expansive than a point to me. And then I... You know, in that place where you say and you're aware of everything that's happening, everything when I get here to the monastery, it feels like life experience is in relief, you know? So the hand, the palm of the hand is like tingling, and I'm noticing it for like the first time, right? Uh-huh. Even though it's attached to my body. And then I watch as the attention gets drawn, and it's almost like I can see a trail because the thought comes in, whatever it is, you know, the analyzing, am I doing this right, or whatever's happening, and then you move us, and then, or I might go back, or I don't know, it's just,
great. And kind of back to what Michael was talking about, right?
Yeah.
So you can see all of those. So then you're, am I doing it right? And yeah, you can sort of see it trail up there, and then we're back to the big toe, and then
right,
it goes wherever.
Right, and it's so, you're almost speaking so slowly, so I move to the foot, but I'm not sure which toe yet, and then you say the right, on the right foot, and so you're just kind of moving around,
ready to attack any toe.
It was fun. That's the first time I've done that exercise.
Oh, is it?
It is.
Oh my gosh, you've been wow. All right. That's very exciting. Matt?
Well, I just think this is awesome. Because part of me was just fully present, enjoying this experience. And it's like a miracle that whatever this thing is, that attention can go to different parts of my body. It's just crazy.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's so assumed and unnoticed. And
yeah,
when we turn attention to it, become aware of it,
yeah,
it's stunning.
Yeah, it's just amazing. And I'm seeing it at the same time. There's a conversation about how well am I doing this. It was almost like 1 to 10 or something. You know, well, this area I'm doing very well at. I really feel that top of my head.
Uh-huh.
I feel it more than I do the palm. There's like comparison and judgment and like, and then it was like, well, I can feel it better if I move it a little bit, you know?
Uh-huh.
But I'm not sure if that's cheating.
Am I supposed to follow the rules or really feel it?
And the reason I'm laughing at it all is because, like, that was my last month at the monastery. Like, how well am I doing this? Constant conversation going on in conditioned mind. How well am I doing this? Am I enduring suffering well enough?
Uh-huh. Am I really aware of the suffering,
yeah,
or am I distracted and missing something?
I'm going to drop. You know, like, but that, and then I'm like, well, you know, also just like everything is like, am I going to get in trouble for whatever, you know? And so it's just so interesting to have like that tiny little exercise. It's truly is how you do anything.
Yes.
If I see, like, oh yeah, that's what I've been living in.
Yes. Yeah. And once it gets that clear, of course, we do have a better chance of seeing it in the larger world. Yeah. All of this that we are meant not to see. Right? It just operates so below the surface of conscious awareness that we're meant to go through a lifetime and never know what's controlling us. And it's just like the giant puppeteer. Right, pull that string, he does that. Pull that string, yep, okay. All right, good. Right, am I this? How's this? Look at that, feel that, do that, go there. Yeah, thank you. Jim?
So, years ago, we had a teacher. I think this is what I remember. He suggested moving your attention inside your body. So, I was moving attention to the top of my head, inside the body,
uh-huh,
and then to the palm, the inside the body, the palm of the hand,
uh-huh,
inside the body, the big toe, you know. And I'm aware that often attention feels like it's completely outside the body, and it moves from one point through space to another point.
Yes, those are the contrails, right?
Yeah.
Where it, whoop, to the, it goes out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's just an interesting experience to move attention. Kind of, to me, it feels kind of like a wave through the body. From one place to the other, keep it inside.
Mm-hmm. Well, now that brings up an interesting point. So when people, let's all turn our attention to the breath. Okay, so just let the eyes rest 3 or 4 feet in front. Imagine that we're meditating. And turn the attention to the breath. Again, we're not controlling anything. We're just letting the body breathe. And notice, does it feel like attention, you're attending to the breath inside the body or outside the body? What did you see?
Phil? Well, I've been noticing that for a long time, because I notice that sometimes when I'm meditating, especially when I'm first starting, the breath is, it's like it's breathing, but it's out right about here. And
literally, where your hands are.
Yeah.
Not in front of your,
kind of
out front of your body.
But it's not like I'm just, you know, how we say it's up here. Yeah, breathing. But it's right, it's kind of more in front. And when I, and that's fine, but and it affects a whole different spot. It's kind of more up,
it's more mental.
Yeah, something hit anyhow. And so when I notice that, I bring it back, and then when it breathes inside right in here, that's when it's really delicious, as far as I can tell. And that's when I like to just let it sit there. But for the longest time, I didn't notice that there were that, you know, to bring it in. I think it's some exercises we have did, you know, that with in yoga or with Krista. So it was. So tonight, which is interesting, I think because of what we've been doing, it was inside. But generally, when I first sit down, it's outside.
It feels outside.
Yeah. All
right. Yeah.
I'm not answering inside or outside. However, what happens to me and happen right now too, especially when you said don't control it, like almost as if I'm not breathing for a very short period of time, but I know I am.
Uh-huh.
And as soon as I did realize that, okay, I'm reading, or I left and I lose it. So it's almost sometimes like scary, but I know it's not, but I don't know what it is. There's like those moments where I feel like, okay, I'm focusing on my breathing, but I'm not breathing almost.
Yes, well, it sounds like the body is breathing, right? But we're so used to believing that we're in charge of everything, that if I'm not thinking about the breathing, well, that can't happen. And yet, of course, we walk around all day long not thinking about the breathing, and we're breathing along just fine. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. That's
right. Well, it was interesting because I was not able to attend to the breath. I was aware of the breath. I mean, in the sense of, it felt like that whole place of, again, not to get too esoteric, for me, the attention is something that it rests on. And so because there was movement, it was almost that in order for me to be able to attend to the breath, attention had to be on my awareness, not on the breath.
Okay. All right. Close your eyes again, if you would, please. It takes us to another exciting place. All right, and allow yourself to feel your body. Okay, there you are, sitting on your cushion or your bench or whatever it is. And you can feel your legs. And then move up, feel your torso. And the body is expanding and contracting with the breath. And then let yourself be aware of the whole body. Just feel the awareness expansive enough that you can be aware of your whole body at once. Perhaps there's a sense almost of being outside the body. The body is contained in awareness. If you notice yourself slipping back inside the body, aware of the expanding and contracting with the breath from inside the body, see if you can just gently move up and back and away until once again you have a sense of the body sitting, expanding and contracting in a field of awareness that you are observing. You'd open your eyes again. It's all done.
At the beginning, I couldn't, so I had the attention going up and down, trying to cover everything, you know, like, this was the head, you know. And then I was like, oh, so this is what Ashwini meant with the point, because I didn't get what she was saying the first time. And then I had this sensation of like of the attention, I don't know, going out, and it felt like my chest open. I'm describing it, it sounds super trippy when I say it, but it was kind of trippy. It went kind of out, and it enveloped everything, you know? And then I was like, oh, and I was describing the experience, but then I would stop describing it, because if I were describing it, it would go away. Mm-hmm. So I kept going from the description to but it was fantastic.
Yes, yeah, that's so it. As soon as this kicks in and you start describing it, it starts talking to you about what the experience is, attention goes to that, and the experience goes away. Mm-hmm. Which is a lot like the, I'm breathing, but I'm not aware of breathing, then the attention goes to, am I breathing? And that experience goes away, and now I'm, yeah. All right, very good. Who else? What else? Yeah, Anna.
So when you're talking about the awareness embracing the body, I was experiencing it like a kind of orb that was just bigger than the body, but like only just bigger. So it was mm-hmm. like just containing the body. And as you kept talking, I became aware of the sound of that bird, you know, going just really softly. And then it felt like that orb experience melted, and it was just awareness, like a boundaryless.
Mm-hmm. And did you lose you in that, or were you aware of somehow being in relation, in relationship to the boundless awareness?
Maybe a bit of both, because I think there was like something pinged back to say, like we were just talking about.
Yeah.
Boundless.
So, oops, no. not anymore.
Because it was almost like coming back to, here's the body. It was almost like I just felt.
Yes.
Not.
It's really, really fun. Yeah. So this is all in pursuit of never being bored in meditation again. In infinite numbers of fun things to do while we're meditating. Michael.
I noticed that it seemed to be tied to the breath. So it hit the whole body. It was almost like I had to take a big breath because the air had to go to my lungs and then all the way down my legs and then out to the joints before I exhaled. And so it was just interesting to see how it all got tied together like that.
Uh-huh. So you were using attention to move your experience of awareness.
Yeah, it was using attention.
You were using attention to move your experience of awareness.
Yes.
So there's you could feel it. So there's the expansion with the breath.
Yeah.
And then as you attended to it, you were moving it down through your body.
It felt kind of like a balloon, like inflating from the middle of my body out to the periphery, and then back, and then out to the periphery.
Okay, so can we do one more? Mm-hmm. Okay, we're going to put them together, all right? Mm-hmm. Okay, so if you close your eyes. And once again, be aware of your body sitting. There you are sitting on whatever is supporting you. And you can feel the breath moving in the body. Seeing if you can stay with that expanded awareness, even allowing the awareness to include this whole room and the other people in the room, a sense of the other people in the room, the breath expanding the body. And feeling the body contract as you exhale. And now within that expanded awareness, turn your attention to the tip of your nose. Still in the expanded awareness. Turn the attention to the little finger on the left hand. Letting awareness relax and expand. Bring attention to the sole of the right foot. To relax, expand, taking in the whole body, the room. attention to the nape of the neck. Awareness expanded. Turn the attention to the sound of the airplane. Okay, if you'd open your eyes. What was that like? Bliss, perhaps?
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. I so love that. It really
I
is.
I want to live there.
It was like the kindest mother or something. You know, just that whole big expanded awareness. Because attention was like the child just moving around, like, because it was maybe the neck was going, wait a minute, maybe the neck, where's maybe the neck? Is it? You know, and it was just sort of met with smile in that whole big field of awareness. Didn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't matter if I went to my left foot or to my right or whatever. It was just like attention could just sort of dance around.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point, there was a sense of a sort of a koan that has been around in my awareness of, now if a door, that back door opened just a bit,
quarter of an inch,
would I know it? You know, and it was like, I know, you know, and it, because it was just, but it wasn't a contest or wasn't a solving, it wasn't anything like that, it was all just
you could
just
see how that would happen.
Yes, you could see how that would happen. Mm-hmm. It's like, because it's like, this is just dropping in, it's like when you set the airplane, that which you're being, right, now, you know, you're in the role of directing the attention, that's sort of like what is there. In this whole big expanded field, you're just playing that role here for us now, but that's always available in a way to us.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In fact, it's what we're living in all
yes.
the time.
Yes.
Right? Yes. And we're just not aware of it.
Yes. Yeah. Until we are.
Mm-hmm. 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 All right. Anything else? Ashwini.
Oh, I was just going to ask if you would help us with some of the logistics of our meditation structure before we go to the evening.
Certainly. What did you have in mind?
How do we sit? How do we count the breath?
Ah.
How do we enter and leave the hall? And somewhat of the structure of the bells, maybe?
Okay. Sure. Sure. So the sit is, for me, is probably the easiest for most people, but we never make a contest out of it. So if you're more comfortable sitting, yeah, Rebecca's sitting up on edge on her cushion. There's some benches. Even the stools in the back are all fair game. We always sit up in the hall, no matter what we're doing. Unless somebody asks you to lie down in the hall for guided imagery. It would be the only reason they would do that, actually. So, as mentioned, the eyes rest at a 45-degree angle. They're soft. They're relaxed. You can see, but you're not looking. The eyes are very much like the ears when you can hear, but you're not listening. So very, very relaxed. And as mentioned earlier, this allows us to begin to take the attention away from that habitual relationship with the eyes and with conditioned mind. And we drop the attention down into the hara as we sit. So the hands are in what we call a cosmic mudra, and the right hand is on the bottom, the left hand is on the top. and the thumbs come around to form an oval. The thumbs are so barely touching that if you had a piece of paper between your thumbs and somebody came along and pulled them, and pulled it out, there would be no resistance at all. It depends. In Zen, one of the best expressions is, with the ideal comes the actual. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this was designed by sitting posture by a certain group of people very long ago in another part of the world. And so it doesn't always fit everybody. And what we're learning to do is to sit in a way that is possible for us. Another expression that I like in particular, we can always do more than ego says we can, and it's always good to do less than it says we should. So in that way, we avoid contests. Did that come out right?
Yeah.
Okay, good. I got halfway through it, and it was like the breath thing. I knew I was talking, but I feel like I was saying. If it works, you can rest the back of your forearms on your thighs. For some people, it works. Their hand actually comes down to the top of their heel. And so as close to that as you can get is very good. The belly is relaxed. The shoulders are dropped. The pelvis is tilted forward. That's probably the most important part of the sitting practice right there is the pelvis tilted forward, because that's what allows the shoulders to be over the hips and takes us to that weightless place that becomes so very comfortable over time. Teeth are touching lightly. The mouth is closed. The tongue is resting on the roof of the mouth just behind the upper teeth. Nose is in line with the navel. Ears are in line with the shoulder. If you push up with the back of the crown of your head, as if you're holding up the ceiling, you get a sense of the chin just tucking in slightly. And we sit. If you like, in the beginning, you can start a breath. Feel it start at the tip of the spine, and as you inhale it up your back, up to the top of your head, and then exhale it down the front of the body in the exhalation at the tip of the spine, and begin the inhalation. Do that 4 or 5 times, and then just let the breath return to normal. Again, we don't control the breathing, just let the body breathe. As the Buddha said, if sometimes it's a short breath, then it's a short breath. If it's a long breath, it's a long breath. We don't worry about it. The body can breathe just fine without us watching it. And then we begin to count. Take a breath in, and as we exhale, the bottom of the exhale, silently count 1. Exhale, the bottom of the exhalation, count 2. We just continue that way until we reach 10, and then we start again at 1. If the mind wanders, which it will, we just notice where it went, bring it on back, start counting again at 1. Any questions about that? Yeah. Hmm? Good.
Yeah.
Just one of the things we notice is that people sit, if their knees are not on the level joint, then to choose a different position or to get forward on the cushion. Otherwise, it's going to be uncomfortable.
Okay. All right. And who wants to talk me through the bells?
Well, because part of the thing to mention that's related to the bells is the recitation.
So tomorrow morning.
Tomorrow morning.
Go ahead, talk us through.
Okay. So tomorrow morning, whoever's sitting on that cushion will ring a large bell, one of those large bells.
Da da da.
And the first sip of the day, we will recite that daily recollection, which
it's
is on
the large page. Piece of paper. You can grab one when you come in, bring it with you. You're welcome to read along. You're welcome to recite along.
And start with the second line, the first line that says silently. Then at the end of the
And you'll hear people who have these give us that.
And then at the end of that recitation, we'll hear a soft bell.
Oh, my gosh.
Mm-hmm. And then that's our sign to be still, to not scratch those itches on our
right,
right ears. Right?
And if you move, you're going to move so carefully that nobody knows.
Yes, and then after the 30-minute period is up, which is really 20 because we've just spent 10 doing the recitation, we'll hear the soft bell. And that's still a...
We don't do anything.
We don't do anything except to maybe put our hands in gusto, because then we have a short recitation, which is also on the table.
You can pick up when you come in.
Recite along. And then after the short recitation, we hear the big bell, at which point we make gusto. And that's when you'll hear everyone kind of get up and shine.
Sure.
So we kind of get our place nice and tidy, plump our cushion, and wipe down our mat.
We call this living without a trace. Because if you die before you come back, you don't want to leave a mess.
Okay. The next person can just be ready to sit.
Yeah, not there, because that's clearly a dangerous
place. And then we make our show to our place, and then we turn and we wait for the rest, for everyone to get up. And
everyone will get up.
And then the person of the guide will lead us in a group bow, which we'll all bow together.
And then Jen, will you pick us up there at the door? Mm-hmm. So when we leave the hall, thank you, Rebecca. Mm-hmm. When we leave the hall, we'll make the quarter turn to the right. Okay? And we will head out. And so Jen is the closest person to the door, so she's going to walk to the door, she's going to turn, and she's going to bow back to the room. June is the next person in line. She bows to Jen. Jen bows to the room, not to June. June bows to Jen, and then poor Jen has to go out in the cold. And then June bows, and she goes out, and we just keep going that way all the way around the room.
And that is a good point that Jen just said. She closes the door behind her because yes, it is mosquito season.
Yes, and even though right now they're out there going, soon they'll be back again. Yeah, so we pull the door closed behind us each time. Yes, Ashwini?
Well, if you're put asleep, don't get up.
If you're put asleep, is that what you're going to say, Anna?
Same thing.
Yeah, if you're put asleep, don't get up. You can just turn around, bow when everybody bows, and then turn around, face the wall, let people leave the hall, and when you're fully awake, then you can stand up.
Rebecca demonstrated if you're sitting that way, the way she was sitting, but and we're facing the wall, so if we're sitting cross-legged, we have to spin sort of to the right. I mean, you know, swivel to the right. We don't just jump up and...
Yeah, good point, yeah. And if we all swivel in the same direction, we don't bang heads. Yeah. So that's helpful too. You know, everything in Zen is actually very practical. It looks strange and esoteric. Yes, Jen?
I was just going to say that when we're walking in the meditation hall, we use one of two postures with our hands. So one is you
can put your fingers over your left thumb and hold your right hand over it, or sometimes people will walk with their hands in gesture.
Yeah. We don't just sort of amble around the hall.
And then the other thing is that so when we come into the meditation hall, it's all the same elements we just did, just not really in reverse, but so entering the hall, closing the door behind me, I make gesture, I bow to the room, and then I walk in a counterclockwise direction to where I'm going to sit. So if I was going to sit, say, where Ahsoka is, I would walk down the perimeter of the room in front of the guide spot, come to where I'm going to sit in that cushion. I'd bow to the cushion. I would bow to the cushion,
yep.
Turn, face the center of the room, bow, sit down on the cushion, and then still the same, swivel around and stay in the wall.
Yeah.
Nothing
to it. It'll all be obvious soon. Yeah, Scott.
We ask folks to be in meditation 45 minutes.
It makes me cranky when I walk up and it's 2 minutes till and people are wandering around taking their shoes off.
That's a good point for a group as well, not just meditation.
Mm-hmm. He said 4 to 5, not 45.
Not 45, because then you would constantly be in the wrong stick. Yeah. So go ahead.
And we do ask that there's that little silent spot between the bells to not blow your nose.
Yeah.
And our,
yes.
Clear your throat and do all of that stuff. To if you need to, if you have nose issues, keep a tissue in your pocket, and then at the end of meditation you can
mop yourself
before you move it around. And but during meditation we sit without moving.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No matter what happens, don't leave the hall.
No matter what happens, we don't leave the hall. That's right. So if you have a coughing fit, we'll all just cough along with you, and it'll be fine. Yeah.
A couple of other things that made me think of, that the breath is also silent. So it's not like a yogic breath. So I've often heard the prompt, if I can hear my breath, so can my neighbor who's sitting next to me. So,
yes.
Yeah.
Good point.
And then the other one is that if there is a spot in front of the light wall, to take that spot versus sitting in front of the windows, it's an extra support for keeping the attention here. And often folks who live here will take the spot in front of the windows when guests are here to leave the prime spots for folks.
The good real estate. You save for our friends. Okay. Unless we overwhelm people completely and they don't get up in the morning, that's probably enough. So the thing about it to know is that it is a lot. It is a lot, and it becomes kind of second nature very quickly. We get accustomed to it too quickly, in fact, because it's all designed to help us pay attention. That's all that's going on. Nobody actually cares. So the voices will, there's someone, so they're going to make a mistake. Nobody actually is paying any attention. It's all for our own practice. So. Okay. Are we good?
Announcement, sure. The guidance schedule is posted, so please sign up for your guidance appointment. I think you went through it in orientation. But
did we?
It on
okay. It's on the message board. Yeah, so sign up in order. Yes, please. Don't leave any vacancies on the schedule.
But I did say I would check that it is in the pavilion.
Is it in the pavilion, Ashwini?
The guidance appointment will be in the pavilion, and where you wait for your appointment is in front of the big bell that's in front of the garden. There'll be a chair and a little stool with a bell on it, so you can't mistake where you wait.
Last week, and It was amazing how many bells people found to ring. it was impressive. I mean, they found bells I didn't actually know we had. So it's that one with the chair next to the big one. We had people reaching over the crepe myrtle and actually you don't have to, it's right there. Okay. So everybody has that, right? So at the time of your appointment, you ring the bell, you wait until I ring a bell from the pavilion, and then you hot put it down there and find the pavilion. Okay. Anything else that
I think it's marked on the map, but does everyone know where the pavilion is?
Anybody not? Don't be shy. Yeah? Okay. So if you were to walk down the you walk through the lawn and there's a driveway that goes past this very big bell that we were talking about, the wake-up bell and that sort of thing. And you keep walking down that driveway, there's a parking lot ahead of you, and you make the right turn right in front of St. Francis, okay? Find St. Francis and what we call the Rio Rose, and you make a right turn there, and you walk down that path, and the pavilion is right over there. So I think you, when you walked out, is the other Francis still there?
Mm-hmm.
So you go from Francis to Francis, right? So you make a right turn in front of the St. Francis by the garden gate, and you walk down, and you'll see another St. Francis, and there's a path there, and you'll see the pavilion.
It's under those big oaks.
Yeah, under the big oaks. So the garden is there, and the pavilion is right on the, across the road on the other side of the garden.
Yeah, it goes behind that new fence.
It's behind the big
brown
fence.
In the parking lot, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Can't miss it.
And where is the chair with the bell?
Where's the chair with the bell? Okay, so if you walked across the lawn, you'll see the garden in front of you, and there's the garden gate, and there's an oak tree there that is a pet, and you'll know what I mean when you see it. There's hardly a branch left on it, but we're going to keep it alive for as long as we can. And right in front of that oak tree is the main bell that people wake up people with, and the chair will be right next to that big bell, and there will be a little bell on a table next to that. And I ask you to stay there because the pavilion is open air. So, you know, if you start wandering down toward it, voices carry and we're having secret conversations in there. We don't want you to hear what we're talking about.
Stay there until we hear your...
Stay there until I ring my bell and then you...
And when it's daylight, it's very easy to tell.
Yes,
and
yeah.
It's really close. It's the closest building to the main building.
Yeah.
You'll be able to see it.
Mm-hmm.
And you ring real loud.
I ring loudly. I don't want anybody to not come and see me. Okay? We're all covered? Everybody's got... Yeah? Yes?
Do people still ring the bell when it's their time and then you will die? Or
yes.
Do you pass?
Yes, yes. Yeah. Unless you're the first person. If you're the first person, I might actually ring a moment or so early just to keep you on your toes.
And you go even before you see the person come.
That's right.
Right? Otherwise it gets lag time.
That's right. We don't want to do that. You've got to be chop chop. Anything else? We're scaring these people. do we have your car keys? Did everybody turn in your car keys? That's important.
I was just going to say, it's such a lesson, and it's so many words for a relatively simple thing. You know, so you're here for 24 hours, it's like, well, that's the biggest.
Oh, that's
a lot of words to describe it.
Yeah. All right. Well, sleep well, everybody.